Hey listeners, my fabulous colleagues Amy Bernstein and Amy Gallo are back with a new season of Women at Work. You know, it's your guide to whatever you're facing at work, from anxiety to Gen AI. Listen to new episodes of Women at Work every Monday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the HBR IdeaCast from Harvard Business Review. I'm Sarah Green. I'm talking today with London Business School professor Kevin Boudreau, and we're talking about big data and innovation. Kevin, thanks so much for joining us.
It's great to be here. Thanks, Sarah.
First, before we get into this, if people aren't familiar with the term big data, what's your quick elevator pitch for explaining what big data is to the uninitiated?
So big data is a trend that could be, or an opportunity that could be as big as the internet itself. And it derives from, in large part, a lot of the internet and information technologies that have risen in the past couple decades. In operations, in marketing, in medical science, in any field of industry today, we collect much more data than we used to. We collect data on every transaction. We collect data, even at the level I mentioned medical research, you know, the idea of collecting terabytes of data even on the human genome and trying to make sense of it. And so the opportunity is no longer one of simply collecting these data, but to use these data to make better sense of our world. And, you know, by developing algorithms and being able to have a greater predictive ability of what will happen in the future based upon what we've seen in the past in business and in science and in any field of human endeavor.
That's interesting. And what I've been hearing as I've been following along a little bit is that a lot of companies see big data as a marketing boom. They can finally track their customers' habits, you know, more closely. But what else could big data be used for? Could it really drive innovation? Could it drive creativity?
You know, I'd first say that beyond just marketing, there's this question of using big data to simply improve how we do things. I've been talking with a number of companies who are thinking about how do we take a lot of information on the operations of healthcare organizations and looking at patient outcomes or hygiene outcomes or any kind of sort of efficiency measure and trying to make sense of, you know, as we have all these different procedures and all these different kind of processes going on at a time in a given organization, how do we tweak, how do we allocate resources, how do we monitor, and how do we equip people to kind of be most effective? And if we think about on the operations side, there are any number of decisions that might interact and try to understand exactly what drives efficiency is one area. So in a sense, we can apply the data we collect to understand how we do things better. And in that sense, we can think about innovation and big data. Mm. As far as the innovation process itself, I think this is an area where, frankly, my own sense is we have not really collected data or has been as systematic in terms of, let's say, an internal R&D team. In principle, we could collect a lot of data to figure out which projects to go ahead on or not, but my guess is we still proceed by heuristics, we still proceed by kind of stage gate procedures and kind of very rule of thumb and kind of subjective calls. I think that there's quite a ways to go in that respect. And so there's some level of innovation even in implementing and establishing predictive analytics that are most effective. And with that, I guess in my own work, what I found is that, you know, we have to often think about even how do we organize projects for analytics. In work I do with Kareem Lakhani at Harvard Business School, we do a lot of work where we actually use crowdsourcing to draw on thousands of algorithmic developers to figure out, you know, what is the best possible solution to a given problem.
So that's interesting. That raises a number of questions, I think, for me. You've sort of given some different ways that big data can really be applied. But I think what I sort of see you pointing to as one of the challenges of big data is sometimes more data isn't always better data. So how does that crowdsourcing work function, and how do you find the answers or the data that's useful in throwing open the gates that way?
Right. So there are a number of ways that predictive analytics can fall down, and certainly that applies to crowdsourcing as well. in the work that we do, we adhere to a pretty strict process where, you know, we first work to carefully define a problem to figure out, you know, if you take a problem that might be in any particular domain, finance, marketing, medical research, engineering, what have you, we first have to sort of transform that into an abstracted, you know, essentially an abstracted math problem that can be exposed to a large number of solvers. We have to make sure that that problem is essentially in a form that really exposes it to a lot of people. Now, you ask about the data itself. What we've done is we like to start with a case where there is, I guess we've already, in identifying a problem, found data in an organization that can be used. So, for example, in looking at an imaging problem, let's say, for, you know, cancer imaging, typically what happens is we have, you know, a whole database of images of past patients, and then we have a diagnosis of, you know, has this person got cancer or not. And so we have, in that case, you know, this existing database, and we can then think about how do we define algorithms that characterize in digital format what is observed on the image, and then looking at, is it a positive or a negative outcome? So we can then write algorithms on some subset of those data to figure out, you know, how do we make that prediction, and then we can test it on a second subset. And a lot of problems, we have these core data sets, but we can actually, you know, go to the crowd to look for suggestions of additional data sets. If it's a matter of, let's say, like I say, a security problem, a national security problem, we can take a bunch of images of satellites, for example, as a core data set that, from satellites as a core data set of something that was provided by the person trying to solve this problem. But then we can go to a crowd, and there may be any number of sources of publicly available data from the internet or publicly available databases that could then be merged. And part of the challenge of analytics using big data is not just the definition of the algorithms themselves, making sure they're effective and they actually deliver the solutions that we're looking for, but there's also a lot of ambiguity on what data to use. So it's a great question you raise, and I think that one of the advantages of crowdsourcing is we can actually go through many iterations and many possible avenues for incorporating any number of data sets.
As you talk about some of these kind of big but really exciting projects, like, you know, healthcare applications, real problems that really need to be solved and potentially could be solved by the intersection of big data and crowdsourcing, what I'm wondering is, who are the people who are helping you with craft these algorithms or look at this problem? Because it sounds like, you know, it's not a for-profit company turning its lens necessarily on this problem. It's a bunch of individuals you may never meet face-to-face who are lending their time to this project. So who are these people, and what do we know about people who help out on things like this?
Right. So I guess the big advantage and point of a crowd is often it's a distributed and highly heterogeneous set of solvers. It turns out now we actually have a number of platforms that have been set up. Part of the job of these platforms like InnoCentive or TopCoder or Kaggle is that they've gone through some hard work to actually build up a community, an existing set of solvers around the world, in the tens of thousands, or in the case of TopCoder, of hundreds of thousands of solvers. These individuals are spread all over the world. They come from, you know, all the way from part-time hackers to grad students in universities to part-time engineers. They're from any number of areas. And the reason that this diversity is quite important is because we're at a period right now where we're actually before the establishment of mainstream data science university problems. We are also at a stage where solving and dealing with big data requires knowledge across sort of the nuts and bolts of infrastructure to provide and house data, and dealing with, you know, just kind of the, you know, network provisioning to allow people to have access to data to solve these problems. Apart from sort of the nuts and bolts and infrastructure questions, we have problems of understanding how to clean, to merge, to manage data, and then to develop the analytics itself. You know, the analytics often involve a combination of, you know, in some cases there may, I'm going to use sort of different categories of solutions to describe this. So what I mean to suggest by, you know, going through this whole sort of series of skills is that you know, the kind of skills that are required to solve these problems and to manage big data and actually deliver useful solutions is quite disparate. And so, you know, the fact that we don't have kind of one person who can solve these problems, but we can draw on a crowd, and this crowd can come from, you know, a whole array of backgrounds, is I think why in particular we're seeing crowdsourcing make such a big dent on big data and analytics at this stage.
Mm. And it sounds like anyone worried that new algorithms will mean that humans don't need to have jobs anymore, you know, maybe just worrying about nothing.
There'll probably be more work for all of us in solving these things in the short, but I actually think that this is going to be eventually a pretty important force in labor prospects for people. I guess the one way I think about it is there was an age in which, you know, Peter Drucker told us about knowledge workers and how we would see this rise of this knowledge class and these people who would manipulate symbols and kind of make sense of data. And I think a lot of the more basic tasks are kind of turning into kind of clerking jobs. I just think that the knowledge worker of the past is probably going to, you know, a good chunk of them are going to perish. And, you know, the kind of data scientists or sort of data savvy managers are going to have a lot more advantages, but it's not going to necessarily translate to all knowledge workers. So.
Oh, interesting. You know, when I think about that, I just see a world of much fewer English majors and much more programmers and statisticians, I guess.
Well, that's too bad. The world needs more English majors. Well, here's a, you know, maybe on the optimistic side, maybe we'll all get, the society will be so rich we can afford more English majors.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
Kevin, I wanted to ask you, as we sort of wrap up here, we've talked a lot about where big data is, you know, today in this early stage. Where do you see it going? Where would you like to see it go? And the next 5 to 15 or 20 years, where do you hope it goes?
Well, I guess I'll respond to this sort of how I think it will move rather than, you know, kind of any kind of normative statements. But when I look at big data and analytics, I kind of see an industry, a technology, a set of capabilities that, you know, look very much like textbook cases of industry evolution. You know, we're at a stage right now in a period of ferment. We have a lot of uncertainty. Executives are wondering where to invest, how to organize around big data. And we've had a couple years of technologists sort of leading the conversation and offering some views on how to proceed. We are very far at this stage from the democratization of this capability across the broad economy. I think it's very exciting to think, I guess in the end game is we're going to have the capability, Google-like capabilities, I suppose you could call them, Google-like capabilities across any number of firms in the economy. But it's going to be kind of a touch-and-go experimental process.
Mm. Well, Kevin, thanks so much for chatting with us today.
Thanks, Sarah. It's been a pleasure.
That was London Business School's Kevin Boudreau. For more, visit hbr.org.